Welcome to the Artist Mother Podcast, featuring interviews with incredible working artists who are also mothers and compelling conversations regarding parenting and the art world. These conversations create a space for inclusivity and support for artist mothers worldwide. I'm Kaylin Butine, painter, mom of three, and podcast host. I'm so grateful you are tuning in, and I hope you enjoy this episode.
There's never days where I feel like I've done everything well. There's going to be days that I'm like, I was a great mother today. Oh, there's a day, I think I really got to focus in the studio today. Oh, I think I made such good food, or like my house is clean today. Like, no, you can't make all of those things happen on the same day. Like, you can be all those things, but I just don't think you can be all those things at the same time. So just finding a way to like carve out these little chunks of time here and there. I am like a natural night owl. And so as soon as the kids are in bed, just like, don't get distracted with anything else. Go up to my studio and just make something.
I can't wait to share this episode with artist mother Julia Whitney Barnes with you today. Julia Whitney Barnes is an artist living in the Hudson Valley in New York State who works in a variety of media, from cyanotypes, watercolor, oil paintings, ceramic sculptures, murals, and site-specific installations. She has exhibited widely in the U.S. and internationally and has been awarded numerous prestigious fellowships. Julia received her BFA from Parsons School of Design and her MFA from Hunter College. Her work is currently represented by Carrie Haddad Gallery in Hudson, New York, and Kenise Barnes Fine Art in Kent, Connecticut. Julia has an upcoming solo show with gallery Julian Sander in Cologne, Germany. She's the mother to two children, ages 3 and 6. Julia, welcome to the podcast. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you. It's such a pleasure. I love listening to the podcast, and it's just nice to kind of have the role flipped a little bit today.
Yes, I'm so thrilled, and I love your work so much. So I just can't wait to hear more about it. All right, start by taking me back to your childhood. Tell me something about how you grew up and if there's any threads that connect to your life as an artist today.
Thank you. Yeah, I feel like I was born in Newbury, Vermont, and I was actually born on the kitchen floor of a Victorian house. It was a home birth. There was a party going on for my aunt, whose birthday was before mine. My mom went into labor. The midwife was at an organic farming conference and couldn't make it in time. And my birth was like part of the party.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So I don't know. I feel like when you
that's like epic. Like you're like, yeah, like I came into the world in a party. And also yes. Your mom must be an amazing person.
Yeah. I was the second. So she had already done one home birth. That was a really long birth. And then my aunt had done also a home birth with my cousin Violet, who I'm very close with. And so she was like, we've got this, not to worry. And thankfully everything worked out. And the midwife eventually got there after I was already born. And it was, they had like set up this whole area where I was supposed to be born. But then even though it was August, it was a really cold night and the house didn't have any working heat. So they had like turn the oven on. They're like, okay, great. Let's turn the oven on and probably easier cleanup and everything in the kitchen.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. I was actually born on this L.L. Bean camping pad that was my aunt's, and she still has it. She still has it to this day.
You need to make art with that or something.
Yes. So my husband is a photographer, and a few years ago, he photographed my aunt and I, my mom, and the L.L. Bean camping pad all together.
Oh, that's amazing. I love that.
Yeah. So I think that, that kind of set the stage for what life would be like. my father is a poet, and he likes to play the mandolin. So he was like playing his mandolin. There's my aunt like, okay, push, you got this. And then my older sister and like cousins were there.
I feel like you need to commission like a portrait artist to paint this scene. This needs to be like the birth of Julia He's like, the dad's over here with the butt. It's like, there's a goat. And, you know, like I can see this as like a famous painting.
Absolutely. Yeah. We did have a lot of animals, but I think not till a little bit later. We had like chickens and rabbits and a dog, and we did have the dog then at least. So, and then it was funny because like, you know, I've done a lot of site specific floor paintings and people are like, right, well, you're really into floors. I'm like, I guess I am really into floors. So, there's just something about like looking at the floor, or like, I often will like sit on the floor of my studio to make work. Like I just somehow feel comfortable working on the floor, looking at floors, or like seeing things from that point of view. And I think that like, you know, my parents were kind of like back to the land people. We were living in rural Vermont, and we moved around a ton for so many reasons. So I grew up like all over New England, but like kind of back and forth between like more rural, like more like slightly urban to suburban environments, and was just used to like picking up and moving and taking stuff with you. Mm-hmm. And I think that like now, we bought our house 6 years ago, and I had actually lived in New York City longer than I ever lived anywhere else. So with so many moves, like it was great because it made me really adaptable. But then now I'm also like, I just love like putting down roots and being able to like get really comfortable somewhere.
Yes.
But yeah, I have like definitely a creative family, lots of music in my family. Like I would grow up with like my sisters and cousins, like putting on performances together. I played like saxophone and trumpet. So like, I would be more into like the music side. I didn't really like to sing. Everyone else in my family like loves to sing. So I think that like, I almost like learned how to play the instrument so I wouldn't have to sing anymore. I was like, I'll just play these. Please don't make me sing. And yeah, my grandmother on my mom's side was also really creative. She was a school teacher. And when she started teaching, it was in a one room school where she would have to like keep the fires burning and like teach children everywhere from, you know, 6 years old to like through high school. And she'd have like the older kids helping her do certain things. But yeah, this tiny little school. And then eventually she went on to teach third grade, and she loved making art. She said, you know, if she'd grown up differently and thought about things besides like from a teacher standpoint, a teacher was considered a very acceptable job for a woman to have.
Right.
That she would have loved to be an artist. And she made quilts. She made quilts. She loved doing things about all different patterns. And my other grandmother went to the Boston Conservatory.
Wow.
And really wanted to be like a full, like, you know, concert pianist, but then stopped. She had three children and she was just became a homemaker and a mom. But I think that like, it sounds like she was frustrated with that she was a great mom, but also just from like the stories I've heard from my father and my aunt and uncle, like, she just had so much energy to put into something, and then to put it all in parenting wasn't like the most satisfying for her. And
I get that. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you have this very rich family legacy of creatives, musicians, like you becoming an artist, your family, they weren't like, no way.
No, not at all.
Yeah, it made sense.
They were like, we support you 100%. Emotionally and whatever you want to do. But just so you know, like, here's the financial aid forms, here's everything else.
Right.
I never, I mean, my father is a poet. Like, you can't get less practical than that.
Mm-hmm.
Like being an artist is by contrast more practical. And my mom had, you know, many different professions and degrees, but she has degrees in psychology, in teaching, and in theology. And when I grew up, she was a minister mostly. So she went back to school to become a minister when I was a little kid. And one of the other things I loved was just like the spaces of church. So I am not at all like a religious person, but I loved being in the spaces when the church service was not going on. So for me, it was like my own private like play space and studio, you know, 6 days of the week.
Especially those like country New England churches, like so beautiful.
Yeah. And we, you know, we always grew up like either like living right next to the church, or sometimes like our house would actually be like attached to it in one of the places. So I definitely liked those kind of spaces. I didn't like always know that I wanted to be an artist, but I definitely knew that like it felt like second nature to me. Mm-hmm. And then I just maybe at 16 was like, yep, I'm gonna be an artist. I'm moving to New York City. And I got really serious and was like, this is what I'm gonna do. You know, I would say I was a reasonably rebellious child and teenager before then. And then I suddenly got like super serious because I was like, all right, I got to make this happen.
Amazing.
I need to like, you know, really focus on this. So that, then I decided there what I wanted to do. And it's kind of just went from there. So from 16 on, I just knew that that was the path I wanted to take.
I love that, Julia. Okay, so, and let's weave this into your work. So can you describe what your work looks like for somebody maybe who's never seen it? Talk a little bit about your process and the medium and materials you use. And if you want, like, I would love to for you to kind of, you know, reflect back on like your style now is like so specific and strong, but I'm kind of wondering like what kind of work you were making like when you were 16 and then like kind of moved through some different phases in your life.
Yeah. So right now I'm working predominantly with cyanotype, watercolor, gouache, and a lot of like plant-based themes. But what's interesting is that it does really hark back. So when I was 16, I said, I was like screen printing my own fabric. I was making these like one-off dresses. And I thought, I am going to make paintings and sculptures 6 months out of the year. And the other 6 months out of the year, I'm going to be making couture dresses based on my paintings and sculptures, because that's a totally practical idea of what could go wrong. And my grandmother sewed. Like, I took sewing lessons as a kid because she was like, you need to learn how to sew. And I thought it was great fun. And I haven't actually sewed since high school, but that's another story. So I was really into it. And then it was an idea that I totally abandoned once I got to Parsons. I took one course in the fashion program and was like, oh, no. This is not what I had in mind. This is not my like teenage fantasy of what I thought life was going to be. So then I just went straight fine arts. And I've always enjoyed working with a lot of mediums. So I've always done like oil painting was kind of like my primary medium. Mm-hmm. But then printmaking and sculpture, I've worked in ceramic sculpture too for a long, long time. And I think that I'm really drawn to the mediums that have this like transformational process, like when you make something in clay and you're not really quite sure what it looks like, and then you put it in the kiln and you have this magic moment where you open it up and it's revealed, or like printmaking too. I'll work the plate forever and then finally get to print it and see what I'm working on. Mm-hmm. So the cyanotype process definitely has that like magic moment, and it's been nice to be able to include my kids with it, because I say like, do you want to come with me and we'll like watch the magic and we'll like put the cyanotype into our bathtub and watch the transformation happen. And for people who aren't familiar with the process, it's like you coat a surface, so any kind of like natural fiber, with the cyanotype chemistry, and I mix all my own chemistry, and then you expose it to a light source, so either sun or UV light. And then after a certain amount of time, depending on if it's UV in the distance or sun or whatever else, you then rinse it. And it's not like a pigment onto the paper. It's a chemical reaction that happens and it like embeds it into the paper. So it goes from being like a really bright green to then sort of a brown color. And then once you rinse it, that like Prussian blue is revealed. And then during the first 24 hours of oxidation, the full Prussian blue color is revealed through that process. So for the longest time, I was like, oh, I work in every medium besides photography because I'm married to a photographer. He does photography. I'm obviously not a photographer. And now I was like, oh, shoot, somehow I became a photographer too. Like, I don't think of it per se, but right. Like officially speaking, cyanotype is considered one of the first photographic mediums.
Right.
So Anna Atkins was the first artist to ever use it as, as like an art medium. She published a book, and that was the first ever book published with photographs. So her book in 1843, Specimens of British Algae, was like the first photographic book. Amazing. So then more or less it is technically photography, but it's not photography that's made with a camera.
Right.
So, you know, that's like, I think of it as more like printmaking. For me, it feels like printmaking. And then I definitely weave like equal parts, like painting into it. I worked in,
say that again. You consider your work printmaking more than photos or painting?
I think of the foundation of it more like printmaking, in the sense of like, I'm making a unique print on paper.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm not like using a camera to make what is there. Right. That's why it doesn't relate to me so much as like the experience of photography.
Right.
You know, and I do so many things to make the cyanotypes. Like I'm using like paper cutouts, I'm using like digital renderings that I create. So like there's a lot of like pattern forms in it that I'm creating through like digital media. And then from there I make negatives. So there is that, but they're not really made with a camera still.
And would that be like, I'm looking at your website, like the, where you see kind of the floor pattern or like a fencing looking pattern?
Yes, precisely.
Okay.
Yeah. Cool. So yeah. And I've done a lot of experiments that aren't on my website, just with like pure, negatives and all using all, like basically all media that I created digitally and then printed, but it was like all pattern based forms. So, for everything that you see on my website, there's probably like, that's maybe 5 to 10% of what I've made. I think that I love being experimental in the studio, but then I've really learned through the decades to like cull it down and say, all right, what is the thing that I want to present to the world? What is it that I'm making? And I could make something that feels more like an experiment. And then maybe 5 years later, it works its way into my work.
Mm.
And actually how I started working in cyanotype, the first ones I ever made was in summer camp, like in the 80s, mm-hmm. like putting seashells and things like that onto a piece of paper. And I was like, this is amazing. It's magic. I love it. And then didn't really think much of it.
Mm-hmm.
And then I lost track on the timing now, but maybe about a decade ago, I was doing these like cut paper pieces, much more collage based. And I was using some of those to create cyanotypes. And then when we moved to the Hudson Valley, I was using it to kind of like document plants and to save plant forms that I wanted to use and like as like studies for paintings or studies for public art. And then I would just make them and like tuck them away in a drawer. Yeah. And then it was really in the last 2 years that I've been focused primarily on that as like my primary medium.
Really? Okay. So the big focus on like floral studies in your work and like compositions of flower arrangements, that really is only a couple years old.
Yeah. I mean, I think that they existed as oil paintings before the cyanotype. So if you go to my website, you can see like the oil paintings are all a bit older.
Okay.
And first I was doing both the oil painting and
your oil paintings are amazing.
Thank you.
What in the world? You're so multi-talented.
Thank you. So it's been, like with the oil paintings, I would do a lot of drawing as like the underpainting. And then I would work things up like in like various like layers of ink or like Versailles. And those were the parts though that I kind of hated doing. I always just like wanted to jump into the part where I was like using the actual oil paint and getting to the color.
Yeah.
And so then when I realized that like for me with the cyanotypes, it's like, I feel like the blue and white acts as like the grisaille for me. And it's a nice way to be able to like cut through and make these direct compositions. So I already have the composition, the scale, like the underpainting established. And then I'm able to like dive into the parts I love the best, which is like actually painting the things. Mm. So I still love working in oil too. And I think that like, you know, it's been 25 years that I've been like an oil painter, and somehow I'm still like, that's still part of my identity.
Mm-hmm.
But there's so many parts of it that I just don't miss that I keep thinking like, oh, I'll make an oil painting. Or like, I don't think I made one. Like I haven't taken my oil paints out in probably like a year and a half, almost 2 years now. A year and a half. And like, it wasn't as conducive with parenthood. Like so many parts of it, like I'd get all my colors mixed. I'd spend forever. And then like, oh, actually something came up and now I don't have so much studio time as I thought. And I would just come back at the end of the day after the kids were in bed and, you know, some of the paint would still be okay. It would still be mixable, but other stuff would be like starting to get chunky and drying out. And then I would just get frustrated. And I had already switched all of my medium, like actual like painting mediums, like to walnut oil and things like that. So I wouldn't have like the solvents because I work from home.
Right.
But yeah, like I used to think that watercolor was really fussy. And then I realized like, the way I use it, it doesn't feel fussy at all. And I just love that I can mix and mix and mix. And then I could come back a month later, throw some water into it. And there's that perfect color that I had mixed. It's just waiting for me.
Right.
So that's been really nice just to like not worry about mixing and wasting, not worrying about like, you know, the smell or like toxicity of anything, that I'm like clogging up my drain, washing oil paint. Like I try to find like the most environmentally friendly way to like wash the brushes and dispose of things and all of that. But it's, you know, I'm not saying that I'm going to stop oil painting because of it, because you kind of like have to choose your battles with that.
Right.
But yeah, I don't miss washing oil painting brushes. That was like the thing I would dread. And I would use so many brushes. I'd be like, how did I use 25 brushes in like one day painting?
But do you feel like you're making your best work right now? Because I do.
I think that, I really feel like this body of work is so many things that I had been thinking about and experimenting with for decades that has really come together. And I think that I am motivated to work in the studio a ton. And it's been like my saving grace during like the last 18 months of just being at home was that I still like look forward to going to the studio. And I've really been able to immerse myself in that. So just cutting out some of the other distractions of life, like, you know, kid birthday parties and like dinner parties and cleaning the house all the time because people were coming over, like, you know, whatever it is. I had also spent years renovating my studio. And so like January or February of 2020, I finished the renovations on the studio. So
great timing.
Yeah. So that was amazing because then, before I would always be like, you know, it was like making huge amounts of sawdust and just huge messes and not having as much space to work. So that finally, for the first time, the renovations were done. I had more space to work in and didn't go as many places. So I was able to like really focus and really just say like, this is what I want to do. This is what I'm going to do. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if other things fall apart in the meantime, oh, well, because this is what's important to me right now.
Amazing. I mean, I was kind of wondering, you know, just about that question about feeling like you're making your best work because, you know, just because it kind of felt like a poetic connection of feeling inhibited by motherhood and having to make specific choices about like, I can't paint in oil anymore. I have to shift and pivot. And I guess I'll focus on cyanotype and watercolor. But then really kind of being backed into a corner, I guess, with like certain materials, but then actually that sort of pressure in that scenario maybe helped you work through some problems that produced like really strong work.
And, you know, I'm someone who, since I do like to work in so many mediums, it's almost like if I have too many choices to work with, then I do like a little bit of this, like, oh, I'm going to make a ceramic sculpture today. Oh, I'm going to do this today. Oh, I'm going to do that today. So just saying like, here's the stuff, this is what I'm going to do has been good for me to focus, to say like, okay, this is the size of my studio. It's even after renovation, it's not like I used to be in like a huge industrial studio building and I had access to lots of ceramic facilities and all kinds of other like printmaking facilities, all these other things. So, so by like limiting, it helped me focus, and by finding something that I could involve my children with a little bit more. It was able to also kind of bring this new level of focus into it.
I'm thrilled to partner with our new sponsor, Cozy, to tell you more about this incredible app. Cozy is an app that specializes in keeping busy families organized. It's an app designed for multiple users to help you and your spouse, partner, or caretakers juggle school schedules, practices, meetings, doctor's appointments, and more. Cozy tracks everyone's schedules and events in one place with a shared, color-coded calendar. A feature I love is the app reminds others about your family's events so that you don't have to be the one who does that. It's easy to get started. You can even pull in events from your family's existing personal, work, and school calendars. You can have Cozy send everyone in your family a weekly or a daily email that shares your agenda. And I personally love the meal planning section. You can create a shared grocery list that lets the whole family add items in real time. So you'll never find yourself at the store without the list. Not that that's happened to you, but it's happened with me before. That list is always on your phone and it's up to date. If you need help figuring out dinner, there's even a place to store recipes and plan meals ahead. The best part? Cozy is free. Just download Cozy, C-O-Z-I, the Family Organizer app from your app store. That's Cozy, C-O-Z-I, and get the free app today. Visit your phone's app store or Google Play to download Cozy today. Start feeling more organized and keep your family communications simple this season. Thank you so much, Cozy, for sponsoring the Artist Mother podcast. I feel like I hear that a lot from artists, that there's kind of like a two sides to that coin, in that people really don't want to be like put into a box, and they don't want to like have their creativity sort of limited. But then there's no denying that when you do kind of have this moment of like focus, and you really feel like you kind of find your quote unquote voice as an artist, and you lean into that and like just really dig into that, there is a lot of like professional growth, I feel like, that comes out of that experience. And for whatever reason, if that's like branding and algorithm and like marketing gets easier, like I think there's a lot that goes into that that's just maybe a natural response to like capitalism. Like it's just easier, right, to like market one thing rather than to market like 20 different things. Yeah. But then, you know, to go back, like it's like that, but then artists are like, I get bored and I want to give up and I don't want to be known for that thing only. Like, I don't want to be a pet portrait artist only. I want to also do this. And so I just feel like there's constantly this kind of tug and pull between that. I was wondering if you could just share a little bit more about kind of that balance for you. Like, how do you sort of maintain freedom and flexibility within your practice, but then also like you clearly are finding a lot of success with like this body of work that you're like really pushing and kind of focusing in on. So like, how have you kind of drawn the line between those two things?
Yeah. I mean, I think that the canon of oil painting and all of painting in particular is so huge. Mm-hmm. So never in my life have I finished a painting and been like, this might be one of the best paintings that's ever been made, because that's crazy. It's just, you know, you go and you'll see all these things. So it does feel good to just be working in like a much smaller pond, in a way of like, okay, well, cyanotype as a medium has been around for, let's say, you know, 175 years, roughly. It was barely used for 30 years. So let's cut that down a little bit. So there's just so many fewer people who have worked in it. And then I think that just the way that I came to it with like more of my own unique voice and like with my like kind of hybrid approach, it does feel good just to feel like I am bringing something into the world that has never really existed before. And like, I don't think about those things so much, but then other people say them to me like, oh, I've never seen anything like this before. I've never seen like just, you know, or like, I came upon your work and like immediately recognized it as your work, or things like that. And it's been interesting to like pull through things that have been interesting to me for a long time, or like I've worked with for a long time, but somehow they're expressed a bit differently in the body of work that I'm doing. You know, I've also been working on this public art project, Hudson River of Bricks, for almost a decade now. And people know me through that project, and you kind of couldn't get any more different that project from my cyanotypes. And on social media, especially, people have been like, I thought you were two different people. I thought I was following one person who was doing this and one person that was doing that. And so that, you know, I think that that's a nice way for me to just work in something that's so incredibly different. So I have these like long-term projects that they just take a long time. So that, that one, for people who are not familiar, I have been, collecting bricks made in the Hudson River Valley. There were approximately 400 brickyards that existed in the region. None of them remain today. It was the number one producer of bricks anywhere in the world. 90% of New York City was made with Hudson River bricks. And there's this rich history with it. And with my background in ceramics, like I just started looking at these bricks as like ceramic sculptures. So here are these individual handmade objects. They're not like, like the bricks that you see now, the modern bricks are like extruded. They're made in a totally different process. If you collect old bricks, the ones that I collect all have names stamped on them. So I started seeing these names stamped on bricks of buildings all over Brooklyn where I was living as they were being torn down. And just thinking how interesting it was that you have no idea as you walk around all of the names that are in the bricks of the buildings that you see every day. This history of it, and then kind of like thinking even about the visual. So was it a backward name? Was it a forward name? Was it just initials? Was there a symbol in it? And I created an installation that is a scale model of the Hudson River, created all out of these Hudson River bricks. The largest iteration was about 200 feet long. And then I glaze one brick from each brickyard, kind of a watery hue of like bluish green color, and then put that brick in the location where the brickyard existed. So when people walk along this like river of bricks, they're kind of seeing that history in a different way and are able to like connect with that brickyard. So it was a visualization of history. I love history. I think that it inspires a lot of my projects. And my goal is to collect one brick from every brickyard that ever existed along the Hudson and then install this piece permanently someplace at like a public institution. So it's just like every brick weighs between 4 and 5 pounds. So suddenly you have thousands of them. You have tons and tons of bricks. I go to like all of the sites where the brickyards used to be. Like I'm always like, you know, digging around old construction sites, like wherever. So these bricks come from all over. I do brick swaps. So I've met lots of people. There's an organization called the International Brick Collectors Association. So I have like my like brick friends, and the only thing we have in common is bricks. It'll be like a truck driver who drives like Walmart trucks cross country. And we like, you know, are on like Facebook groups together and mail each other things. We don't talk about politics.
Brick lovers.
Yeah. We don't talk about politics at all. And it's just, yeah, it's this whole other world of people who are interested in bricks. And so I think that that project like keeps things interesting, because if I ever get sick of like, you know, growing plants or like foraging flowers, I can be like, cool, let's go on like a brick expedition today and get so filthy and like have my back hurt like crazy and all those things. And then I'm like, okay, I think I just want to sit in the studio and like paint some like tiny, you know, detailed flowers for a whole day instead.
Okay. But do you ever feel like you've kind of painted yourself into a box and you're not sure, like, what should I be sharing on Instagram? Or like, what should I, like, how do you pursue, you know, the opportunities that you want with sort of the art world rules, quote unquote, that are out there? You know, like, I feel like, I don't know. It's just, I think that those kind of boundaries like get in people's head, and it makes them afraid to like really move forward and pursue what they're passionate about. Cause they're like, oh, but I can't like, you know, like, how does this fit in on my website? Like, what do I do with that? And do I share this on Instagram? And it just becomes this whole, I don't know, which
I know what you're saying. I totally know. And like, I had a big body of work where I was using encaustic, And I've never posted it on my website because it just didn't. I was like, really? I'm going to stick one more category on there. Like, oh man, that's just, it's just too many categories. Like I'm constantly pulling things down because I am someone who likes to work with so many different things that I feel like it's good to just like share a little bit more of like what I'm actually doing right now. I think that since I am someone who likes to like jump around with things, it speaks well that I'm still really interested in what I'm doing. I don't think that this is like the longest amount of time I spent on a project, but like maybe hours wise it is, just because I've spent so many hours during the last like 2 years just in the studio being able to focus. When I first started, I was terrible at plant identification. So I would grow things and be like the pink one with the thingamadoo that comes out that looks like this. And meanwhile, like I would spot a brick from like 100 feet away and I'd be like, I think that's a JJJ, Juan Wasilnikova, made in Newburgh during, you know, 1882 to blah, blah, blah. So like all of this like obscure brick knowledge would come into my head and I'm like, but like the plant names would just evaporate immediately as soon as I've learned them. So one of the things that I'm like feeling really good about now is that like the plant knowledge is really starting to stick. And I'm working on a project I can speak a little bit about that's a collaboration between the Shaker Heritage Site in Albany. It's a collaboration also with Albany Airport. And that has been great because I have been collecting specimens from this medicinal herb garden that was a recreation of what the Shakers were actually growing. And I have like this like hand-drawn map I've made of like where all the plants are, a 13-page document about what like what is the common name, what's the Latin name, what are like the nicknames of the plant, what was it used for. Maybe that was like used for like leprosy, maybe this was like used for like there's like, this was used to treat hysterics. This one was used to treat, you know, whatever. Like there was so many different purposes of all these like plant-based medicine. So I think that being able to see the plants on many different levels has been really rewarding and just kind of like all of this growth that is not so visible. So like just having a deeper connection actually with what I am working with and like, even using the same medium, but like sneaking in, be like, okay, well, this maybe one whole piece that you're looking at was about trying to cure syphilis, but someone's going to look at it and be like, I have no idea of that. So like as an artist, like that you can like sneak in these little like inside things that you find really amusing. And then like, you know, the outside world can like choose to look at it. And just for the record, I've never made one, but I might, you never know. So I'm really excited about that collaboration. And, you know, as much as I love growing plants and harvesting the plants that I'm growing, it's also just so nice to like push myself to engage with the history. I find like Shaker culture so fascinating. I didn't know that much about the Shakers before I started the project. So like this whole side of me where I like to do public projects, I think that the public projects are a way to had me like step outside of my comfort zone and like push my ideas with some other work too. So they are going to be cyanotype based, but I have a lot of ideas for that project and just like creating this herbarium of the 150 plus plants with it has been such a huge undertaking. And I think that that's going to like seep in to the other projects that I'm working on too.
Amazing. I want to talk a little bit about gallery representation. And I think this connects to this conversation about like your practice being diverse and like not always having containers for things. I also really respect what you said about like, you don't have to show everything that you make. Like just because you're interested in something and you made it and you think it's cool doesn't mean that you're not like curating things off your website or off your Instagram. And that's like totally normal and okay. So I like that point that you brought up. But I am interested to hear, so you have this like branch of your practice that's like, you know, site specific installations and like doing bigger projects with like educational, you know, groups and different things. But then I know you're represented by a couple galleries. And I'm assuming that gallery representation is for your cyanotype work and your more like well-known body of work. So just wanted to hear you talk a little bit about like how that is connected to your practice and how you kind of maybe balance like just time management, like working with galleries versus following these paths of like doing things that you want to do and like keeping up with deadlines.
Yeah, I'm happy to speak about that. And, you know, I think that it used to be like an exclusive representation. I remember I would go and see galleries like when I was an undergrad and be like, ooh, that artist is represented by. And I think it meant something a little bit different. Like the galleries that I work with, you know, I'm still me doing things and I love that they show my work and I feel so incredibly grateful. Both the galleries that I work with locally, I've only been working with just this year is the first year that I've worked with them. And then the gallery that I'm going to have the show with in Germany, I have known the gallerist for many years. And it's just funny because the gallery is predominantly like a photography gallery. Mm, but I'm like, well, obviously I don't make photography. And then I was like, somewhere along the way, I was like, oh, right. I guess I make photography now.
Right.
So it's going to be a really different body of work for his gallery to show. He does the gallery. He is a great. I've lost track of how many greats. Great great grandson of August Sander, the famous German photographer. His father was a gallerist. Like he has all the whole historic side. So he shows all of these historic artists, including artists working with like really early photographic media. So this is going to be like his first show of an artist that's kind of like more of this hybrid technique, but then pulling through some of the older mediums. And I think that I do well with deadlines. I need the deadline. I need to say this is when the show opens to really just say like, okay, let me like put together this body of work and see what happens. And I guess just multitasking in order to keep me interested when I have. If I'm supposed to be working on one thing and another idea comes into my head, unless like I am crazy crunch for time, I just stop what I'm doing and explore the other idea because I know otherwise I'm probably going to ruin what it is I'm working on. Because I won't be engaged with it. And suddenly I'll just be like, going through the motions, painting this leaf. And it'll just be like the most lackluster leaf you've ever seen when I'm done. Like, you know, I am not a machine that can just like perfectly execute these things. Like I have good painting days, bad painting days, good studio days, terrible studio days. So I find what really keeps me engaged is like going down these rabbit holes that I have when an idea pops into my head. And one of the things I love about working on paper is just that it doesn't take up much room, that I can like make 20 different versions of something and have them all like try to figure something out with it. And if they're all just like total fails or total experiments, they can just sit in a pile in the corner of my studio and like wouldn't have used many resources, aren't going to take up that much space. And if I really want to, I can just recycle them at the end. I can like photograph them, recycle them, whatever. So I think that it definitely is a balance of just figuring out what I want to make because it's interesting to me, what I want to make because I'm committed to a certain show.
What about practically what you need to make because it brings in income?
Yes.
Like how does that kind of fit into this, you know, conversation?
So one thing that's been interesting for years, people were like, I'd love to buy a print of your work. I'd love a print. And I was like, I don't know, stubborn or I don't even know what it was, but I saw some prints and I just didn't think that they were good. Or I experimented with other ones. So I was like, eh. So like once a year I would explore making prints. And then from there I was like, no, that's not really doing it. And then finally I was like, all right, I really have to go all in on this. And I made a lot of different tests. I tried out all different technology. I tried working with different printers. And then finally I was like, okay, these look amazing. Like I honestly cannot believe that this is a print. This feels like my work. It looks like my work. So by being able to offer prints of my work has been just amazing. Like even for me, like when something leaves my studio, like I miss it. And I'm like, mm-hmm. oh, but I love that one. Like I wanted to look at it. I wanted to look at it for these reasons. And so like, I don't even have the originals of those pieces, but then I can make a print for myself just to have in the studio and be right. able to look at it in a more physical way than just like looking at it, a photograph of something. So that's been really wonderful. And I've just been blown away by how many people have bought prints of my work. I only started making them like 6 months ago. And then it's, you know, it's definitely like a time management thing now because I am.
Yeah. I was wondering if you're facilitating those yourself.
Yeah. I do it all myself and, you know, maybe some month or year, I'm going to have to like relinquish control of that. But I like to personally see every single one of them, just signing all of them. Mm-hmm. I write cards to every single person who I'm sending work to. I feel like, you know, it's like sending love out into the world in that way. So if I'm going to do it, let me really do it.
Yep.
And yeah, I think that side of things has been great from a practical standpoint because it has brought in a significant chunk of money. But then on the flip side, it takes a long time. It just, mm-hmm. it's a lot of things to keep track of.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like time that I used to have as just studio time coming into the work to make new pieces. So I'm probably making fewer works because my work has to, you know, I have to take the time to like to do the prints, but then I'm able to like send more work into the world because I'm able to offer, instead of just one singular thing, you know, offer prints of the same piece in, you right. know, different sizes or whatever. But yeah, so that's, you know, that's all good. And it feels like it connects to the public work that I'm doing because I do love making things that are extremely time consuming. You know, like it's this like uncomfortable thing as an artist where like you have to charge kind of a lot of money for work because it's all of the efforts that go into it. It's all mm-hmm. of the time that you spend learning those things. Just so like, I'm so, so deeply invested into my process financially. But then I'm like, but I don't only want to make things that only like wealthy people can afford.
Right.
So it's been really wonderful to be able to say, okay, here is like the one unique piece that's getting sent off into the world. This is the original one. No one can have this one but you, but I can also make things that are very obviously prints, but that, you know, just so many more people can enjoy.
I love that. And I think it's really good to hear you talk about that, both the idea of like normalizing a part of your art practice that like brings in income that is kind of just a more, you know, like utilitarian, like leg or arm of the practice. And that kind of freeing you up to like do bigger work. And like, I think it's so smart. And a lot of artists need to like rethink some of that, like instead of putting all your eggs in like the big, huge oil painting selling, you know, like, is there something else that you can do that can kind of generate, you know, income or whatever it is you need, like whatever the resources that you need. And even though, yes, like you do have to devote some time to it, like that thing actually can serve as a way to like open up other space and time or resources for you. So I just think it's like really smart, a smart way to go about it. And I'm glad that you feel confident in the prints that you offer. Yeah. I feel like your work too is really conducive to like prints. It's already a photographic based medium. Like it would naturally to me like look really well as a print, in the same way that maybe, you know, somebody who's like an oil painter who like is a very thick, like layers upon layers of oil painting. Like, I don't know how that would look.
Yeah, I totally agree because I have made prints of my oil paintings. And even though they're like amazing photographs of the painting, it's a different experience. So mm-hmm. when the original work is a work on paper and I'm using this like Hanamuel German etching paper for the prints themselves. So then like, the paper itself has a similar quality that the original does. You know, I'm lucky because my husband is a professional photographer. That's what he does. So he used to actually photograph art like in 4x5s and slides and all that, like, you know, decades ago. But now I'm like, you know, every few weeks I'm like, honey, can you come up to my studio? And he has just all of like the perfect photo equipment to take really, really high res, you know, perfectly in focus images of my work. So that was like kind of a no-brainer. Like, right, I already have like a live-in photographer.
Right.
I should take advantage of that. And
that's like me. I have a sound engineer. I can start a podcast, you know, like use what you have.
Yes, absolutely. So that's, you know, that I think that I had one less barrier for that. Like the small works, I do just scan them because it's easier than like asking him to come and photograph like every single thing. But yeah, for all the big ones, he photographs them, and that's, you know, that's amazing.
Awesome.
Hi, I'm Mindy Widock with the Artist Mother team. I wanted to take a moment to share about our Artist Mother Network. You have listened to the podcast and maybe follow along on Instagram, finding support and validation as an artist mother on these platforms. We have a space that offers a more personal experience in the artist mother community. Come join our Artist Mother Network, a place where more tangible friendships are created and resources for you as an artist and a mother are abundant. On the network, you will find groups to support your interests, like the Single Mothers Group. Through these subsets, I have personally found forever friends and strength in the wisdom and support of other women. Our network offers free artist talks on so many different topics. Jody Hayes recently gave us a tour of her studio and how she keeps her art life organized. We also have one workshop by an artist a month, offered to you for free with your membership. Tara Carpenter Estrada just walked our members through a trace monotype printing workshop that was so fun. All of our workshops and artist talks are recorded and saved on the network, so you can access them if you aren't able to attend live. I also co-host the morning show with Kaylin Butine. We start Monday mornings in community with you talking about topics deeply relatable in our artist mother identities. We have recently discussed how we can be fearless in our studios, what bravery looks like as an artist, and have shared in vulnerability and what makes us afraid. These morning shows are the best way to start the week. Please don't miss out on this opportunity to connect with us on a deeper level. Our network offers an affordable membership of $11 a month or $121 a year, and your first 2 months are free. This gives you access to our artist talks, workshops, morning show, exhibition opportunities, a growing resource library for artist mothers, and many support groups with other network members based on location and interests. The network also provides you the opportunity to take part in our leadership training so that you may become an artist mother community host in your own geographical area. The network has been such a wonderful source of friendship, community, and artist resources. I am so proud to be part of this artist mother world and am grateful I get to share it with you. I look forward to getting to know your magical self. I will see you on the network. You can find all the information you need to join on our website at artistmotherpodcast.com.
All right, a couple more questions. Let's kind of wrap up before we get to our final five, just talking about art and motherhood and like how you're kind of balancing having two young kids and like the pandemic and like all of that. If it looks like you work a lot and you're pretty prolific, and so I'm just wondering about like how you're managing childcare. And I know you also have, like you mentioned, a artist partner, like somebody who also is freelance creative. So just wondering about sort of that balance between like your family life.
Yeah. So we started homeschooling my daughter. She was in school in pre-K, and then the pandemic hit. And, you know, of course, we thought, oh, here's this 2 week, it's an extended spring break. And we already had our younger child, so we were taking care of him. Neither of our kids have ever been in daycare. And it's just always been like, pass them around and figure it out and make the best of it. My secret weapon is that my mother lives with us. So
we have
a live-in grandma, and that she's in her mid-70s at this point. So, you know, we try not to like overly burden her with responsibilities. But it is good, just like, you know, we do have that extra person that can be there. But you know, it's a lot. And I think that there's never days where I feel like I've done everything well. There's going to be days that I'm like, I was a great mother today. Oh, there's a day, I think I really got to focus in the studio today. Oh, I think I made such good food, or like my house is clean today. Like, no, you can't make all of those things happen on the same day. Like, mm-hmm. you can be all those things, but I just don't think you can be all those things at the same time. Mm-hmm. So just finding a way to like carve out these little chunks of time here and there. I am like a natural night owl. And so as soon as the kids are in bed, just like, don't get distracted with anything else. Go up to my studio and just make something, or like, okay, they've got like, you know, Daniel Tiger on for 25 minutes. What can I get done during this amount of time? I am not going to say that I was the best homeschool teacher for kindergarten. Like, I just, you know, I was like, okay, well, it's just kindergarten. We're going to really focus on the social emotional learning during this time.
The arts and craft.
Yes. So a third of my studio was, I just relinquished and said, okay, this is now your studio / kind of my son's studio too. And during the last year and a half, she has spent a lot of time making art and listening to podcasts, which I was like, I've trained her to be an artist. She has her headphones. She has her favorite podcasts. And she will now, like, when it first started, every 5 minutes, she was like, mom, I'm like, yes. Okay. And like, we could not work at the same time at all. And it took a few months, but we really like found our groove of like,
oh, I love
here,
that.
Like, the shows drove me crazy. So when I got her the headphones, I was like, okay, this is the best idea I've ever done. Like, have some headphones. Here's like my old phone from forever ago.
Right.
Listen to podcasts. We like subscribe to like a kid podcast app, and she will happily work on things during that. And it used to be like my son would take big naps. And so like, I'd have a few hours a day where like, he'd be like having a nap or quiet time. She'd be listening to a podcast, making art. So at least I would have like a few hours during like the middle of the day. And then I'd have more time again, like, you know, after the kids were asleep. But we just, you know, we fight about it. I'm like, no, it's your turn. No, you're on duty. And like sometimes with three people, we'll be like, didn't you tell them? No, I thought you told them. No, didn't I tell you that? No, I thought I told you this. So you get like, you get like the triangulation of like who told what to whom, and you know, who you think is going to be on. But you know, it's been 6 years now of the three generation household working. So I feel like that's
amazing.
It's kind of a miracle. It's not always easy, but it's definitely rewarding, and the pros outweigh the cons. Like, it used to be that we'd barely be home. All three of us would be so busy. So like during this time when we were all home, like we always like, stop breathing so loudly, stop chewing so loud, you know, like the little stupid things that shouldn't annoy you that just start to annoy you. but we find a way to make it work. I think that my husband was just in France doing a project for 10 days. And like during that, like that's, I for sure felt jealous. I was like, but I want to be at a chateau in Normandy right now. Yeah. I'm home taking care of the kids. But I think that it just wasn't practical to take them, and just so much money and so like just so much invested during like COVID and everything else. So you just kind of pick and choose. I have a fantastic partner, and that I think is, you know, he and I both knew who we were when we got married. I never said like, I want to get married and have children and focus 100% of my attention on them. Like, that's not me. When I don't have time in the studio, I'm not a patient mother. I am not a patient partner. So everybody knows to like, give me some time and space, and then I will be a wonderful person, and I will, you know, make dinner, and I will whatever, clean up toys and everything else. But otherwise, like, no, then I like have the shortest fuse. Like, if I don't have time to work on what I want to do, I'm just, then I'm not doing anything well. So they've gone into a good enough groove where they're like, have some studio time. Okay. Go. Like, get out of here. I'm like, thank you. Or love I'll that. Just like, you know, you kind of have to take time where you just disappear, because if you just wait for the perfect time, it's not going to ever happen. So I just will like, I'm like, oh, look, he's with them, or my mom's with them. Like,
just let me just sneak out. Yeah.
and then I sneak off until someone comes to find me. Yes. And sometimes that's 5 minutes later. Sometimes it's like 2 hours later.
Yeah. I love that. Okay, Julia, one more question. Just curious to hear you talk a little bit about some maybe things outside of art that you feel like fuel or inspire you? So like, what are some just things that really, that you're interested in that kind of nourish you as a person?
Sure. I mean, I think that certainly related to art making, I teach, so I'm on faculty at Marist College. I've been there for 5 years now, as an adjunct, so part-time faculty member. And, as much as it's a distraction, just like prepping lessons and whatever else, like, does make me think about things and like forces me to kind of stay sharp with, you know, with my research, cooking. I love to cook. So we are part of the CSA, Poughkeepsie Farm Project. It's just right down the road. So like we do like the pick your owns, and then we get like a weekly harvest from there. The things that we grow ourselves. We've got like a super bountiful tomato garden right now. So I think just food, like food is definitely one of my passions. I don't like to clean, but I absolutely love to cook. Love cooking and baking, and like I like researching recipes. I like looking up, you know, three recipes for something and then finding a way to combine all of them. Like, I'm not so good at being like, step one, do this, step two, do this. I'm like, cool, I like this part of this one and this part of this one. Let me put it all together. One of the things I like to just do is be like, okay, well, we haven't gone grocery shopping in a week. What can I pick or like pull out of the freezer or like pull these random things? So I like to like challenge myself to make something really delicious when it looks like we've got nothing in the fridge. Like to like, you know, like the day before our CSA pickup, I'll be like, okay, this is going to be my most creative meal of the week because I got to use up all those random veggies that I had no interest in all week. So I definitely
pot pie is always my, or enchiladas. Ooh, enchiladas and pot pie is like the, who knows what kind of vegetable is in here. It doesn't matter. Just get some crust, get some cheese. It'll work out.
And I mean, I love butter and olive oil. And like, if it's got butter and olive oil, it's going to be good. One, two, both, a mix of that. I mean, I think like in what feels like another lifetime, travel. So for sure, travel would be really inspiring. I love going to like visit gardens. I love going to see old buildings. Just all of that to kind of like bring that back into the studio. Baking.
I love that.
So yeah.
That's a kind awesome. Of- okay. Final five, sure. Quick questions for us to get to know you a little bit better. Thanks so much, Julia. Who's your biggest art crush?
I think the one that like sticks out to me is Betty Woodman. So she, you know, SRAM system painter. She was just like the hugest art crush for me for such a long time. And I got to visit her studio in Antella in Italy. She made me lunch. She like served everything off of like all dishes that she made. Just seeing her house with all of the things that she had made, and like even like all of like the tiles and everything that she made for her swimming pool, like meeting her was one of those moments that I was like, yes, this is it. Like, she's married to another artist. It just, you know, of course she also had a tragic life with her daughter committing suicide. But beside that, like, she was able to like make, just really make her whole life feel interconnected and like bring so much joy, into the world. So she's probably, yeah, my biggest art crush. She's no longer alive. I would say living artist, Inka Eisenhai, the painter. I have just like crushed on her paintings so hard since like when I was in undergrad. I would go and see all of her shows. And I think that one of the things that's so nice now with like, there was no social media, you know, 20 plus years ago. And so like now just like following someone on Instagram and getting to see like the fun, like studio process. Like, so that's really nice. Just of an artist that I've followed for such a long time, but now getting like a much more intimate view of what they're doing. I've heard her lecture too. I just think that her paintings are absolutely phenomenal. And she seems also like a really, like a good person, which is a nice combination.
Yes. That like backdoor look into, are they actually a good person? Like, that's definitely a nice thing about this day and age. Okay. What is one of your favorite places to travel or a dream trip that you'd like to go on?
Okay. So I used to travel a lot. I would say places that I've been, that I loved: Iceland, Switzerland, Italy, Spain. Those are probably my favorite places I've already been. I would absolutely love to go. I've never been to Holland and I've never been to Portugal. And I think that both of those places, I've been like really interested in the blue and white ceramics from there, like the whole blue and white palette. So those two are like the top of my list right now that I'd love to go see.
Can't imagine why you like blue and white.
I know, right? Yeah.
Okay. Tell me a book or a film that has really inspired you in your lifetime.
So I like books with a lot of images in them. I am like surrounded by books all the time. I can't name just one. I would say for film, probably my all-time favorite film was The Wizard of Oz. And seeing it as a young person and then rewatching it again and again. And I think that like the color palette, so just being introduced to it in black and white, having it move to this like really vivid world of color, questioning what is reality, what is fantasy. I love so many parts of that movie. And it's just like one of those ones that made an impact. And I feel like I'll still find myself visualizing something of that movie, you know, I don't know, maybe I was like 8 the first time I saw it, but so many years later.
That's such a great answer. I love that. Okay. Favorite meal.
Okay. So you already know I love to cook. So this is really difficult. I do also like when other people cook for me. So probably my favorite meal would be my husband makes amazing salmon with couscous and like chopped up veggie sausage with like tons of veggies, some toasted walnuts. And I just think that like the combination is perfect. And when someone else cooks it for you, it tastes even better.
Love that. Love that. Okay, Julia, final question. Just want to offer you a space to give a shout out or thank you for someone who supports you in your work.
Absolutely. So I know I've mentioned him already, but my husband is Sean Hemmerly. He's a photographer. He's incredibly humble. If you go onto his Instagram, it's mostly just like really touching photos of our children, like really beautiful, heartfelt things. Meanwhile, he's got like 3 museum shows going on in Chicago, like things that he just doesn't even talk about. So definitely he's like someone in my life who supports me so much. Also my own mother. So where would I be without my own mother? I literally wouldn't be here, but then also she helps me all the time. My sister, so she became a mother over 20 years before I did. So just seeing her go down that journey made a really big impact. And of course, like just all the people who show my work, who collect my work, who give me feedback, even just like comments, who help give me input. I think that it really does take a large community of artists all around you to kind of make it feel like you're not just creating work in a vacuum. So make it feel like, yes, what I'm doing has an impact and matters and is able to reach a wider audience.
I love that. It takes a village, right?
It sure does. It really, really does. There's so many mamas and artist mamas, and I can't even start naming names. So I'm going to stick with my family because otherwise I'll leave people out.
Okay, Julia, where can people find out more about your work and what's your website?
So my website, juliawhitneybarnes.com. I'm also pretty active on Instagram and on TikTok. And then you can see my work too on the galleries that I show with. So if you go to the links page of my website, you can get to a whole bunch of different things.
Awesome. Thank you so much. This was so fun.
Thank you. I loved talking with you. It was nice just to have some like sit down one-on-one time.
Yes, I loved it. Thanks, Julia.
The Artist Mother podcast is curated and produced by Kaylin Butine. Music by Josh Middleton. Editing and mixing by John M. Butine. Please visit www.artistmotherpodcast.com for episode notes and to find out how you can further support this podcast.